You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Holy cow! It is 8 p.m. in the Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere. But if you just add water on Sunday nights, what do you get? You get Simple Flight Radio, and once again, we are live. I'm Al Waterloo. Thanks for joining us, and guess who's on the line? Mark, you there?
I am. Can you hear me now?
I can. That's amazing. Technology's great, isn't it?
So I'm looking around. Where are you? I don't see you.
I was thinking about the same thing. I can't figure out where you're at.
Well, I'm not a KPWK, but I have a sense that you're not there either.
Well, how do you know if you're not?
You just said Eastern Time, and you wouldn't say that if you were in the Central Time Zone.
Oh, that's true. But tonight's kind of a special show. Mark and I are not necessarily broken up, but we're not in the same place to broadcast live from. I'm out in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Can you believe it?
I'm just wondering, how does that happen? And we picked Sunday night because we were both to be available, no job, and all of a sudden you call me, hey, I got to take a trip to Doylestown. What's with that?
Hey, you know, I don't know. There's a saying that I'd like to say in aviation. The key to indecisiveness is... or flexibility is the key to indecisiveness. So
you can't even get that out right.
No, I know, I can't.
What does that mean?
So take it any way you want. Some swing left, some swing right, and
don't.
But that's how it turned out. Can you believe it?
Hey, it's like you say, technology is a wonderful thing, and this is going to be an interesting show, not only because we have a great guest and we're two interesting kind of guys, but the mere fact that we're so used to playing off of each other and seeing each other and then looking out over the ramp and seeing those beautiful airplanes. Right now, I'm looking at my office in my house, and I love my house, but it's certainly not the same as an airport at night.
Yeah, and I got to say that my favorite part about broadcasting live from the KPWK airport is, you know, there's always some type of business jet, usually some medium-sized Citation jet, and it always fires up, and the Jet A fumes get throughout the ventilation system, and it just sets the tone audibly, and I guess from a smell standpoint as well.
Well, that's why I brought a can of kerosene home with me, so I'd have that just next to my desk here, so I feel like I'm there.
Yeah, well, hopefully you didn't pay $9 a gallon for that. But
no, I put it on your credit card.
So well, okay. Absolutely. But I think it's going to turn out okay. We've navigated the wonderful aspects of technology to make sure rain, sleet, snow, hail, or any other natural disasters, Simple Flight Radio will always be on Sunday nights.
Yeah, and I guess I have no idea if we're having any audio problems, but I'll just tell our listeners right now, in the last couple of weeks, people have said that sometimes it sounds kind of choppy, and maybe their internet connection. We just say, hey, refresh, and every time they've refreshed, it's fixed any audio problems. So
yes,
that's happening. Try a refresh on your computer, and hopefully that'll fix it, and we will be good to go for the next couple hours.
Absolutely. You know, there's a, you know, it's... I think that definitely solves the problem. The F5 key is a good way of doing that, or on your phone. Definitely hit refresh if we go in and out, which we hope we don't, but sometimes it happens.
That's because you're at, well, I won't say what kind of a hotel, but a hotel, and we just never know what kind of connection you're going to get there.
Yeah, but that's all right. Anyway, well, we're going to have a great show tonight, and we're looking forward to it. And, you know, there's a, we always start off with a good laugh, don't we, Mark?
We try. I mean, if it's me doing it, we try. And I think I don't even know how many shows we've done now, but several months or a few months. And as I said, I think 2 weeks ago, I think I've only crashed and burned once.
Yeah, well, that
just wasn't funny.
No. Looking back, maybe that is the Sunday night chuckle. Looking back on it, how horrible it was, that's a pretty epic moment in Simple Flight Sunday night chuckle history.
You know what's kind of interesting? My first show, which was I think your second show, was probably the funniest aviation joke that's out there. And because we only had a few listeners, and we have exponentially grown over the last few months. I may ask your permission, especially as we get toward Christmas, that I get to retell that joke, because I think we'll have a lot more people, and with the holiday season, I know you know which joke it is. We may look to do that around the end of December.
Absolutely. I think that would only be appropriate, and make sure that if there are any kids in the room, to cover their ears.
Because yes, exactly.
That would throw kids' presidents in jeopardy of successfully arriving then.
There you go. So anyway, yeah, I can try and enlighten you or make you smile tonight if you're in the mood.
Please do.
Well, excellent. Then I will go ahead. And in spirit of our show tonight, and I think everyone knows that we're going to be talking to Dave Pascoe, who's the founder of everyone's favorite internet site, liveatc.net. And because of the connection to air traffic control, I thought I would tell a joke that was related there. And as you know from, gosh, how many weeks ago we had Jim Krieger from O'Hare and Dave Seward from JFK, I've always wanted to be a tower controller. Just didn't work out for me, but I love what they do, and I love listening to them talk, hence my love affair with liveatc.net. So I thought in that spirit, I thought I'd go ahead and share a chuckle that was something heard on the airways.
Let's hear it.
Okay, let's go. And I'm going to pick one from an airliner because I don't like to pick on GA too much. And so the call that we heard over liveatc.net went something like this. First with the tower after clearing United Heavy for takeoff, and he gave the following command, United Heavy 222, contact departure 12055. And United responded, contact departure 12055. And by the way, we noticed some kind of dead animal on the departure end of the runway. And
wow.
The tower said, Roger, we'll check that out. And thanks, and have a good day.
All right.
So then the tower goes over to Continental 635, turn right 060, cleared for takeoff runway 4 right. And by the way, did you copy that dead animal report from United? And Continental responded, yeah, Continental 635, right, 060, cleared for takeoff runway 4 right. And yes, we did copy United on that, and we've already notified our caterers.
That's awesome.
Okay. Good, I made you smile.
You did it. You nailed it. Oh, my goodness. And I was just going to tell why did the chicken cross the road joke. Jeez.
Yeah, actually, I have a spin on that, but that also wouldn't be for... I won't even go there. It wouldn't be for the youth or anybody else that's probably listening to our show tonight.
Absolutely. Oh, that's amazing. But that was, Mark, you nailed it. Talk about a grand slam in aviation terms of ATC. If anybody can find that ATC feed out there with that, please send it to us, and that'd be pretty gnarly.
Yeah, the frequencies and call signs were changed to protect the innocent.
And the dead animal.
And the dead animal, right. Whatever that was.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we ate it on the next flight.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, we're actually, this ties in very well. There was a couple years ago, I was in Manchester, New Hampshire. And I went, I was flying for the airlines at the time, and I ended up... flying into, we flew into Manchester, and we actually got a report of use caution, dead animal, you know, was reported on the runway, and they sent out the airport ops, but they didn't see anything. But they still gave us the used caution. And it was not too. It was in the month of November, which we're in. I think it was actually Election Day 2008 that we landed in New Hampshire. So almost 4 years ago to the day and change. But I remember the captain that I was flying with. We get to the hotel. And he said, "Hey, do you want to go out and grab dinner?" I'm like, "Sure." So he says, "I'm like, okay. Well, let's meet down in the lobby in 10 minutes." So. Anyway, I come down. I've got my jacket on, blue jeans, and a long sleeve shirt on. And there he is. He's wearing a white undershirt and thigh high gray basketball shorts. And I'm like, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Oh, I just forgot all my clothes for this trip." And I'm thinking, I'm like, "How could you be a pilot and forget all of your clothes?" So in honor of him, I'm going to give a weather report for what he really should have packed tonight on the Manchester, New Hampshire overnight. Let's see here. Let's get the AWATS on the line and see what's going on.
Manchester Airport.
Very good.
Automated weather observation.
By the way, it's a beautiful day here in Chicago, as you know, since you only left a few hours ago.
Yeah. It's calm.
1-0.
It's clear.
Condition clear. Temperature -0.1 Celsius. Dew point -0.5 Celsius.
-0.1.
Altimeter 3065.
63065.
Manchester Airport.
Wow.
Automated weather observation 0.
Holy cow, 3065. Have you seen a altimeter setting that high before?
I don't think so, although it was, what was it in Chicago yesterday? 3055, which was pretty high.
Yeah, that is really high. I couldn't believe that. But, what's that?
It's been a great week in Chicago for flying. Unfortunately, I only got out a couple days, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, absolutely. But with -1 degree Celsius, I don't think I would really want to be walking around Manchester in thigh-high gym shorts and a white undershirt.
Actually, if it was 150, I wouldn't want to see you in thigh-high gym shorts.
Well, that's a difference of opinion.
Yeah, actually, I should talk.
Definitely don't want to see me. I'm looking at the guy who's has the generic Skype picture right now, which is a white silhouette with a bald head. So I wouldn't go talking.
And I know who you mean.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned that you only got out a couple times this week, out flying, I would presume. But did you do anything cool?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of things cool for only the couple days I was out. I forget what night it was, Thursday maybe. Matter of fact, you were out as well. Got a call from a fellow member at the Leading Edge Flying Club, and he was just going to go out and get some night currency and practice, and asked if I wanted to hop along in the Piper Dakota that we recently picked up at the club, and we went. Actually just up to Waukegan, which is all of, 5 to 10 miles north of Palwaukee. Papa Whiskey Kilo, and after that it came around 7:30 p.m. and we headed over to Schaumburg, the 06 Charlie in the Chicagoland area, just west of O'Hare, underneath the Bravo Shelf, and they have a great restaurant on the field, Pilot Pete's, and met up with you and your instrument student, and we had a nice little dinner, and then got to fly back. It was just a beautiful night, so that was certainly part of my highlight of flying. And then yesterday got an oil change in the Dakota, and I went over with another club member in the Sky Arrow, which, not the Piper Arrow, the Sky Arrow looks kind of like an LSA, and they do have an LSA version, and you kind of wear this airplane, tandem seating, and I had only been out once before when you checked me out in it, and I just had a ball. I mean, it's, you never want to fly that airplane above 1,700 feet. It's just
that's the kind of view that you get.
Yeah, yeah, awesome view. So anyway, that's part of my week. Certainly there were other things, but I'm sure nobody else wants to hear the rest of my week. How about you?
Well, about 1 hour ago, I landed out here in Philadelphia, or Doylestown. So actually, hopefully we'll have him on a little bit later in Hangar Talk. But my coworker, who's the other co-founder of Simple Flight, Mr. Travis Avin himself, He flew us out from the left seat today, which is a pretty big honor for a pilot to move over to the left seat, and that was a great flight, crystal clear, You could literally navigate from Chicago to Philadelphia via pilotage. That's how clear it was. You could see all the cities and everything.
Wow.
Just absolutely crystal clear. It was gorgeous.
And does that mean you moved from the left seat to the right seat?
I did.
Okay, but it was because Travis was promoted, not you were demoted.
Absolutely. So Travis was promoted and did a great job, and it was absolutely fantastic. Great
flight. Congratulations to him if you see him.
Absolutely.
Now, you also have a big week coming up, actually a big couple weeks. I understand that you have one of your students is going to be, I won't say trying, I'll say earning his private pilot certificate this next week, and the following week one of your students will be earning their instrument ticket,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, it's really exciting. So this week on Tuesday, a student of mine will be getting his private pilot certificate, which will be fantastic. And then another week down the road, an instrument student of mine will be earning his instrument ticket, all from, remember Mr. Bob Schmelzer?
Do I remember Bob Schmelzer? The man that let me fly a United 777 simulator.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mr. Bob Schmelzer from a couple weeks ago is going to be coming on the show. He was already on the show, and he's going to be... I wish he was coming on the show again, but no, he's giving both the check rides to the students.
Oh, that's exciting. Bob's a great guy, a great pilot, and I know they will do a great job making us proud of you as a great instructor. So that's a lot of great in one sentence.
Yeah, that's all right. Let's play a game. How many times can you use the word great in a sentence?
Not so great.
Absolutely. But what if you were if something was going on in aviation on anything before this day, what would have happened, you know?
Yeah,
did you turn
actually
back
do.
The clock?
Do you know?
Well, I turned back the clock a little bit, and I know that you did. What do you got for us?
Well, the one that actually I wanted to look for November 18th, and I found an event the 14th through the 17th of November. It wasn't a one-day event. It was a multi-day event back in 1965. In
wow.
A flight, yeah, a while ago, but again, a multi-day trip in a flight sponsored by Rockwell Standard, a Boeing B-707 became the first aircraft, and I'm going to quote here, to girdle, that's right, G-I-R-D-L-E, girdle the globe going north to south, covering 26,230 miles in 62 hours, 28 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, they began in Honolulu. The flight flew over the North Pole, made stops at London, Lisbon, Buenos Aires, flew over the South Pole, and returned to Honolulu by way of Christchurch, New Zealand.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm actually going to spend some time researching that. I'd love to know more about it. Maybe it can pick up some live ATC archives on it. I don't know.
Yeah, right. Are you going to research how to girdle a 707?
I guess so. I guess I'll just have to take it off to learn about it. But anyway,
yeah,
well,
right.
Tell me, maybe you can go back a little bit further from 1965 and tell me what happened on this past weekend or this current weekend.
Sure. Well, back in 1949, the Beech Aircraft Corporation announced probably one of the coolest twin-engine airplanes, but that was the Beechcraft Twin Bonanza. You remember that plane? Have you ever seen one?
Actually, I saw one a week and a half ago up in Janesville. A guy pulled up. This guy just loved his airplane, looking to upgrade it for a little bit more speed, but he's owned it for a bazillion years, and he just couldn't sing the praises enough of his twin Bonanza.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a 5-to-6-place airplane. It did about 1,000 nautical miles of range and 185 miles an hour. Not a bad little airplane. Actually, it's not a little airplane. It's huge.
Yeah, it's not an Aztec, but at the same time, and it carries a load, and it's wide, and I think its speed suffers a little because of that.
Yeah.
But again, going back, what'd you say, 1949?
1949.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then we just saw one the other day. So.
Absolutely. What do you know what the nickname for that was, or that airplane?
Actually, I don't. Let me guess. The easy one would just say a twin bow, but that'd be too easy. You tell me.
It was called a T-bone.
Oh, I was close.
Yeah, very close.
Yeah.
That was really cool. That was I really like those, and I the twin Bonanza morphed into I guess, the single engine that we know today, and then that twin platform transformed into the Traveler.
And then to the Baron?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are pretty cool airplanes. I really like that that line of aircraft.
Oh, yeah. The grill quality, I love them as well.
Absolutely.
Hey, real quick on the history thing, just for grins, I did find something that was even older, and we think, okay, something in the last 110 years or something, because there was no aviation before that. At least something in the sky, if you go back to November 12th, I get this, 1799.
Holy cow.
Yeah, 1799, November 12th. The first meteor shower on record happened on that day. So happy anniversary, meteors.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers, yeah.
And I'm going to, you know what, I got to add one more thing. And this happened today in aviation history, along with a great flight out to Philadelphia. But for the very first time, I saw the Boeing 787 a passenger airplane. I was driving past O'Hare, and it was getting ready to take off on 22 left, and I was on the highway driving past, and sure enough, it was right there, and I couldn't believe it. I think I was even on the phone with you, Mark.
Yeah, I heard you all of a sudden get giddy. And that's, if you listened to last week's show, or was it 2 weeks ago, I don't know, you made some comment about me being giddy.
Yeah.
Like a 5-year-old girl or something like that. I don't know what... Still don't know what that meant, but So, did you see the wings flex? Did you see its takeoff roll?
I could, you know, by the time I passed it, and if I turned around, I would have caused an accident, and you know, no flight to Philadelphia probably, and no simple flight. So I had the show's best interest in mind by not turning around.
All right, my head very around. Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but that's great. But I think I'm really excited about tonight's guest, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mentioned it earlier. You know, there's, I think with all of us, we have a connection with ATC, and then the ability to pick and choose, you know, who we get to listen to, go back to archives, you know, go back to the Oshkosh and listen for your planes, clearance and nice rock and all of that. It's just a great sight.
Absolutely. So Mr. Dave Pasco is going to join us. He's the co-founder, the founder of LiveATC.net, everybody's favorite aviation website. And Mark, can you get him on the line for us?
I can try, and I'm going to push a button here.
All right.
Add to call, and are your fingers crossed?
They're crossed.
All right, here we go.
All right.
Got a picture of him.
Yes. That's perfect.
And if this doesn't... Dave?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Hey, it worked.
All right.
I had to shut I was listening to you guys, so I had to shut the stream off real quick.
That happened on show 1 through 10 for me, where I'm like, "What?" But that's.
I didn't want my head.
Did you laugh at my joke?
I did, but the reason I had to shut the stream down is I didn't want my head to explode when I picked up the Skype call.
There you go.
Absolutely. Or I was thinking maybe because my joke, it was so horrible. I don't know.
Did you tell a joke?
I probably not. In my head, I think I did, but it probably didn't come out as one. But anyway, Dave, it's great to have you on with us tonight, and this is pretty. I know LiveATC is .net is my favorite website, and I've been listening to it for a long time. How long has it been around?
Well, we've been around since sort of late 2002, but really 2003, really, and it's in any kind of public form.
Very nice. Oh, that's great. There's a so what was kind of the inspiration behind it?
Well, it was really simple. It was something I needed for myself. I was doing my IFR reading, and I live in the Boston area, so I really wanted to get familiar with Class Bravo airspace and communications around Boston, so I decided to throw a couple receivers up. My brother happened to live near Boston, so it was fortuitous, and I was able to, you know, knowing a lot about streaming audio and that sort of thing, I was able to just throw up a couple receivers. There was another reason why I wanted to do it, and at the time I was heavily involved in VATSIM, which you may or may not be familiar with. It's a virtual flying network where pilots plug. For the listeners who don't know about it, it's a great network, VATSIM.net, and pilots plug in with flight simulator and make-believe air traffic controllers plug in and connect with them. So it was really pretty cool. I was doing ATC training in Boston, actually, the virtual Boston ARTCC. And so I wanted to learn a little bit more about the real-world Boston procedures just to inject a lot more realism into the controlling that we did on VATSIM, which was, it was really useful for that. So that was it. And then you know, we threw it out there, and then there were other folks who you know, basically started writing in and saying, hey, I was I live near so-and-so airport, and you know, I'd love to send that one to you as well. So kind of grew organically from there.
That's pretty cool. I'm familiar with those different types of simulators where, you know, the virtual airlines and things like that. I've never messed around with them myself. Do they still exist? Are they still around?
Yeah, VATSIM's still alive and well. There's another network. I think it's called IVAO. I was never involved with that one, but those are the two big networks. And VATSIM is really a fantastic place. It's really interesting, and we had, over the years, we had some what you call LAN parties. There's an event we hold in Boston, actually not far from Boston Center, every year that a bunch of pilots and controllers come into a facility. In this case, we get together at Daniel Webster College near Nashua Airport and do a fly-in, basically a virtual fly-in. And we've had actual controllers come over from Boston Center and from the Boston TRACON to watch the whole thing in action, and they are blown away by the realism and by how close we are to the real-world procedures. So very cool stuff.
No kidding. Mark, don't you think that would be a fun that could be a flyout for our flying club?
As so, let it be written, so let it be done.
Absolutely, that sounds like a riot.
Now, Dave, you said you were familiar with audio streaming and all that. Where did that come from, and how does that connect with, I guess, your main career?
Well, I on the audio streaming part, what I was really familiar with was very, very early on. I was involved in, you know, early version of the internet. And I used to listen to JFK Tower on what used to be SUNY, I think it was SUNY Brooklyn, had a real audio server, the development version of it, that allowed for like 5 to 10 listener connections. So this is back in the days of, you know, 1200 and 2400 baud dial-up. And so every day, and I did this when I was working, 5 or 10 of us somewhere in the world would try to connect and listen to JFK Tower, and that was it. You had to just keep clicking connect, and you know, eventually you'd get connected, but you didn't dare drop your dial-up connection because you didn't want to lose that connection and the inability to, you know, listen to, or the ability to listen to JFK Tower. So anyway, that was, as a user, that was early on. But my background is, I'm an electrical engineer, been involved in communication systems for a number of years, but back in the late 80s, took a detour into the IT world, and I've been involved in system administration, network administration, security work for quite some time, and a whole bunch of things that have grown out of that.
Wow. You know, you mentioned the 1200, 2400. I remember all those days very well. But I started listening. I bought, it was at Radio Shack, not a ham radio, but it just, you got all the ham stations and other things, and I only bought it because I knew it had the frequencies, and you dial it. There was no digital. You just turn the dial and listen to O'Hare feeds and all of that. Not feeds, but the actual over-the-air ways you could pick it up.
Yeah, you didn't dare touch the dial either, right?
Oh, my God, you get static then, right? You had to just nail it. There was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it not only had the regular tuning, then there was a little knob for fine-tuning.
I had one of those tunable radios when I was a kid. I'm a scanner buff, and I'm a ham radio operator and all that, but I was a scanner buff when I was a kid, and the only thing I could really afford, and I saved every single penny to get this radio, is one of those ones with the tunable, you know, vernier dials, and geeky kid, I used to strap the thing onto my 10-speed and chase, you know, fire engines, but that wasn't the only thing. I did listen to ATC. Even back then, this would be back in the 70s, and I used to ride my 10-speed down to Philly International and, you know, gawk over the fence and try to, you know, tune things in. So this goes back, this sickness goes back quite a ways.
Yeah.
Well, and a sickness we all share.
Yeah. Right.
You know what? My new way of going to the airport and listening to the scanners. I take my iPhone and pull up the Live ATC app, and I've got a little adapter to plug it into the car stereo, and I park, and I can't believe how real time it is. It's very quick, and you know, you see everybody just depart, and it's awesome. I the first time I discovered and figured that out, I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like screaming at the top of my lungs. It was like, wow, what a discovery.
Yeah, the technology that we have available today really not only makes all so much more widely available to so many more people because of the proliferation of cellular data networks and stuff like that and Wi-Fi, but it's really, really, really great. You know, previously everybody had to have a radio and you had to drive down to the airport, and we all know that's on anyway, but I still tell people, though, you know, bring your radio, especially if you're going to Oshkosh and you want to listen to the feeds. One of the biggest weaknesses of, of listening to liveatc.net is if the crowded area like Oshkosh, where cellular data service is really terrible just because of all the crowds that really just can't be served by a cell system in a very small area. It's really disappointing sometimes. If you're going to a big crowded event, bring your radio.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. That's a great idea, actually. But going back to what you first said about liveatc.net, you said that people were interested and say, "Hey, I want to throw up a scanner." Is this how all these feeds have come about? People have kind of reached out to you and say, "Hey, you know, I live near an airport, and you know, how can I get a feed going at near my airport?"
Yeah, we get feeds in a couple of different ways. LiveATC deploys quite a bit of equipment ourselves in a variety of locations. We tend to focus with our setups on the busier airspace. I think like O'Hare, JFK, you know, a lot of the big Class B airports. But other things too, some of which I'm interested in, some of which we've had, you know, other people express interest in, like some of the Boston Center and a lot of the other centers and a whole bunch of other stuff. But the way that it works is it's somebody setting up a radio scanner, hooking it up to a computer. Increasingly, the size of those computers is shrunk down to now something that can fit in the palm of your hand. If you've ever seen all this scuttlebutt about the Raspberry Pi computer, for example.
Yeah.
And we have some other things we use called Shiba plugs and stuff like that. But if you already happen to have a computer and it already happens to be up all day and all night, then we just have people hook their scanner into that. But the feeds that come, they don't come directly from ATC facilities. And this is one thing I think that when people first stumble on the website, they don't understand, because we'll get comments like, you know, why don't you have coverage in Atlanta? It's one of the busiest airports in the world. Is it just an oversight on your part? And, you know, have to tell them and educate people that you have to locate receivers and antennas close enough so that you get good reception. It doesn't do us much good to put a receiver 25 or 35 miles out down in a valley where we can hear the airplanes but we can't hear the controllers. So anyway, the bottom line is to get all these feeds is a lot of work. It's not only people who volunteer their time and resources graciously, but it's us, LiveATC, actually actively recruiting people and deploying our own equipment to bring some of the more desired locations online.
Actually, Al and Dave, you may know this yourself. The Milwaukee or Chicago Executive Airport feed actually is hosted by our flying club, the Leading Edge Flying Club.
Hi, Todd.
Exactly.
Absolutely. No, I think that's pretty cool. At first, when I first joined the club, and I went up to the clubhouse and I said, "Oh, what's this?" And there's a little note that said, "Don't touch. Turn the volume down on the computer only. Not this." And so on and so forth, and I think I may have inadvertently powered down the scanner once, and I apologize to all the Live ATC listeners for the Chicago Executive Airport feed because I just didn't know what I was doing, and I had no clue how important that little scanner was. And, of course, I broke the rules, so I'm sorry. But
so you're the guy.
Go ahead, Dave.
No, I said so you're the guy.
Yeah, right, exactly. LiveATC.net has become like a pretty big, a really big website. And you know what was funny that I was watching the news about a month or two ago, actually on another layover here in Philadelphia, and there was a foreign airliner going into JFK that had declared an emergency. And, you know, on the news footage, they had the helicopter, you know, with the video camera filming this airplane making its emergency landing. But in the bottom it said video or audio provided by liveatc.net. And I was thinking, holy cow, that is like, that's really cool to see that, hey, this website is used not only just for pilots, but for delivering news and things like that. Did you ever think that liveatc.net would get to a point like that where, hey, you know, the news channels are picking this up and your feeds are broadcasted on TV?
Yeah, I guess early on there was really no thought that that would ever happen because there was also no thought that it was going to grow as large as it has. So, you know, I guess, you know, it's a good thing and it's a sometimes it's a not so good thing. I think most of the time it's a good thing. I spend a fair amount of time throughout the year working with the media and trying to help them understand what they're listening to when they either pull the archives or ask us for material. You know, the material doesn't always end up produced in the right light. I think it's more a commentary on today's media and the for ratings and stuff like that. But I do a lot to put things into perspective so that they understand that the whole conversation has a, you know, there's a whole context around it, and it's not just about grabbing some little soundbite to, you know, sensationalize a story, but they're going to just do what they're going to do. And someday maybe the media will get better again. You know, like I think at one point in time long ago it was. I don't know when that's going to happen, and I think it's, you know, not going to happen soon. So
yeah,
not always bad. I mean, the media in an unpopular light, but the reality is that sometimes these stories just end up really making them look stupid because they have experts who are helping them out, you know, ex-pilots, ex-air traffic controllers who give them perspective on the story. They just choose to not always pay attention to it. They're just looking for this nugget of sensationalism. You know, it gets old. Especially as aviators, we really don't appreciate it. So.
Oh, that's
you mentioned aviators, so let the audience know you are a pilot, correct?
Yeah, I've been flying for about 11 years.
Whoop, I don't know if you're hearing that, Al. I'm blanking out. Are you there? Still there, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got okay. You. You're
maybe
coming
it was
in.
Just high end.
Maybe it was a solar flare.
Yeah. It's that meteor shower coming back to bite us.
Yeah, all the way from 1799.
Exactly.
Welcome back.
Absolutely. Ask that question again, Mark.
Yeah, Dave was asking about your pilot credentials because you mentioned, you know, that the pilots understand and all that, and I know you're a pilot, but I want to make sure our listenership noticed that as well.
Yeah, I'm a private pilot, instrument rated, closing in on maybe, 750, 800 hours, somewhere in there. And I am minutes away from my control pilot rating, but I've been minutes away from that for about 4 or 5 years now.
So. Why should you be any different than me?
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier, so we're gonna. I think we will have that race.
There you go.
The live ATC Mark Eppner race. I love it.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Dave, you know, one of the things I'm sure that other listeners like myself, there's not only the live part, but also going back to the archives, especially if there's, maybe it's an Oshkosh or maybe it's a tragic event. And I was wondering, is there statistics in terms of how many people listen to archives versus the live piece?
No, by far, I don't have exact numbers and the relative size of the audience is listening to either one. By far, the live streams are listened to much more than the archives.
Okay. And I, when I do go back, sometimes I'm listening for specific things, and there was an accident recently, and I listened to it, and then when I talked to someone I know in the ATC world, they gave me information I didn't hear. So are these exactly what the ATC guys get on their tapes, or is there some, I don't know, of editing, or just somehow some things are left out?
Yeah, this question comes up a lot, and first of all, there's no editing. There's the whole operation is completely automated, so everything that comes through site on a live stream basically just ends up in the archives in that exact form. The reason that some things might be missing from time to time is that we can't really afford to cover single frequencies per audio stream everywhere. So, for example, if you look at JFK, I'll give you a real-world example. We cover, as an example, New York departure, 135.9. That is a single radio on that stream, so there's nothing interfering with it. Many airports, though, we can't really afford, or the volunteer can't really afford to have the infrastructure that you need to have one channel per audio stream. So we'll have a scanner scanning between, in some cases, 2 to 5 frequencies or more. And if a transmitter and then the scanner starts scanning again and then locks up, say, on another frequency. So if you were listening to tower and you wanted an interrupted conversation on tower, but it happens to lock up on ground, well, you're going to miss what was happening on tower when it started scanning again. So that's the reason that sometimes things don't appear on the archive. Another reason is sometimes we just don't have the radio coverage that's good enough to hear everything on the airport, especially if there's an aircraft on the ground behind a building and stuff like that.
I got it. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Mark, how many times have you gone back and listened to yourself on liveatc.net?
You know, I'm surprised. The only time I did was at Oshkosh last year when I flew in by myself, or not by myself, but as PIC in left seat for the first time. But that's interesting. As much as I get just giddy going back and seeing my pilot report on the internet.
Yeah. Oh, that's that's cool.
Dave, doesn't take too much to impress me.
Yeah, right. Dave, do you go back and listen to yourself a lot?
I wouldn't say a lot, occasionally, but I think this is one of the things that I feel really good about Live ATC for, which is we really do a lot to help student pilots learn some semblance of the real world communications outside of the cockpit environment. It's great for them to go back and to listen to their flights, but what one of the purposes we really serve is to have them listen to not only the book but other airports that they might fly to, and it's a lot stressful to at least get familiar with what to expect rather than doing all that comm training in the cockpit.
Right. Absolutely. No, that's interesting as a training tool. You know, I could definitely vouch for something like that. I definitely use that, and it's funny because in the way that I use it as a training tool, not just to let my students kind of look into the future of, oh, hey, listen to this. This is how busy it's going to be. I'll go, and anytime I'll make a mistake on the radio or the controller gets a little miffed at me or something like that, or maybe even I screwed up, I'll go back and find that and try to save it so that people can, you know, I can use that audio and say, hey, look, you know, this is what happened. This is how you handle a situation like that. So that's kind of neat to see how, you know, this audio is being used in a training format in a couple different ways. I think that's definitely very powerful. Have you gotten any feedback on how else liveatc.net has been and the audio has been used in kind of creative ways?
We had one guy who actually mixed in ATC with I think it was actually some electronica type music, and
that's awesome.
Wrote in, he said, hey, you know, is it okay if I use this audio? I'm going to mix it in with this song, and, you know, yeah, he really wanted to just use it for himself and send it to his friends and all that. I still have a copy of it somewhere, so it was interesting. But, you know, it's used a lot for type things. In some cases, even though it's not quote-unquote official, and this happened out at an uncontrolled field out in the western U.S., it was actually being... The audio was being requested by the FAA for some sort of investigation into some incident that went on there. And the reason they were asking for it is they simply don't have, you know, a tape. They don't have a tower there. So we've got a little bit of that. Other areas that, not the archives, but just listening in, and this really speaks to the audience, I've gotten, I don't know, probably a couple dozen emails over the years from, and there's got to be more of them out there if it's already a couple dozen that wrote in, but nervous flyers that are just scared of flying.
Yeah.
They start to listen, and they, it's amazing to me that, you know, people like that will just sit there and listen to it. Some people are familiar with listening in from United and Channel 9 when they can get it, but, what they start to realize is there's a ton of safety and sanity built into the national airspace system and commercial and general aviation, and they just get a sense of this by listening how generally orderly, you know, things are carried out on the radio, and I think that's pretty neat. Some of the other stuff we bring people is aviation communications and in some cases live radio broadcast to the masses from air shows. Do a lot of work with Sun and Fun Radio, and we work out at Oshkosh to bring that. We've been doing that for a few years now. So it's really interesting, the wide variety of the audience beyond, you know, av geeks and pilots and controllers. It's really kind of neat.
Oh, that's pretty...
How long do you keep the archives, by the way? I know I'm focusing somewhat on that, but I just use those so much.
Right now, we keep the archives for 45 days. It's really mainly limited by storage and economics, but...
Sure.
Working on deeper retention of the archives, it's likely that things go beyond that phase or somewhat less. We'll have to, there will be some small fee associated getting one of the older archives, but we're working on a 1 year, 1.5 year type retention.
Wow.
Oh,
Al, I think I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, hey, you know, with the use of here's another way that I've started to use them. I'll use a GoPro camera or something like that, and I'll take the video footage, and then I'll try to match it up with the liveatc.net feed or the archive. Go and find it afterwards and after the flight. But have you had anybody email you or send you any videos of all the yeah, you know, of their flight with attached up to a live ATC feed?
No, but lots of people who are doing video inside the cockpit and piping in their intercom to the GoPro or whatever camera they're using. There's one fellow who flies down in the I think it's the New Orleans area who regularly posts his videos like pairing up a live ATC feed. I'm sure some have done it, but I can't recall. He's actually done it and sent in a video, but you know, it's pretty easy to do. So,
yeah, definitely. Well, that's cool. What? So, if you were I got to ask for your virtual controlling. What facility do you work?
When I work, which, if any of the vets guys are listening, they'll be chuckling because I've gotten down to plug it in maybe two or three times a year, but. I work in the Boston Center facility, which can include anything from Boston Center all the way down to Boston Tower. But my favorite controlling positions are Boston Center and Boston Approach.
Nice, absolutely. If we were starting up a little Twitter feed with people on the before the show, and I was asking everybody what their favorite, if they were to be a controller, which facility would you work at, and. I would definitely have to say mine would have to be O'Hare, just for nostalgia reasons and the high workload. Mark, what about you?
Yeah, O'Hare. Actually, I love listening 12055 Chicago Approach on the north side because it includes so many of the pilots we know. And you know, Oshkosh during AirVenture is just a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that and here's the snowbird in me, I guess. I wouldn't mind also working Santa Barbara. I don't know. There's something about Santa Barbara, California that I really like. And, heck, that would be a heck of a retirement job somewhere down the road.
But, there you go.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, so, Dave, what about coverage? You know, as we look at, you mentioned that you have feeds in western remote areas that maybe the FAA doesn't have recording of. What is the size of the liveATC.net coverage, and what's left to go?
Well, in terms of, you know, raw streams, we're somewhere over 800 audio streams, which doesn't mean 800 airports or 800 areas, but we're somewhere over 800, and we're definitely over six, you know, unique airport areas. So what's left to go? There's quite a bit left to go, believe it or not. We... you know, one of our biggest missing Class B airports is Atlanta. And Hartsfield's just really tough to get radio receivers located close to. Fortunately, we have an opportunity to install some equipment really, really near, you know, like basically there. And we're going to be investigating that over the next few weeks and seeing what situations where we need to mount all the actual equipment outside in an enclosure, so the logistics are a little bit more difficult than what we typically deal with. But Atlanta's one. Want to get some expanded coverage out at Los Angeles. We're right now sort of wherever we happen to get where we get volunteers from, but we're chasing a number of areas, not just for kind of expanding out like we just did at Dallas, but so just areas that we really, you know, don't have a good presence in. The thing about feeds, though, and you know, it's important that people understand this, is that you know, they can come and go. People move. People, you know, cease to be maybe interested in doing it anymore, or they had an equipment failure and they can't really afford to equipment.
Or they have Al Waterloo go in and pull the plug by mistake.
Quite a feeds that have small children that end up, you know, being the cause of outages. But anyway, so yeah, there's a lot going on. We're pretty excited about the expansion that's going on.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome. Did we had a listener tweet in, and if you wouldn't mind answering this for him. He's wondering, is this your primary job now, managing liveATC.net?
No, I mean, it does take up quite a bit of my time. I spend quite a bit more time working an IT consulting business that I run, but increasingly it takes up, you know, a lot of time. It certainly takes up a lot of my waking moments.
So. I'd imagine so. So how many people work with you on the site?
I have two or three other folks who do contract work, mainly on the programming side. It's mainly to help with some of the mobile app development, and then other volunteers who help out in the field. But you know, sort of the and back office stuff, I handle all that stuff myself.
Yeah, and then it's basically for the other 800 audio streams. It's, you know, on a volunteer basis and all that. That's really neat. So, if somebody wanted to set up a feed, how would they get in touch with you and create this? What's kind of the process?
Well, on the current version of the site, they would just and on the navigation area that's on the left side, just click on volunteer. I think it's called volunteer a feed, and or offer a live ATC feed. It says it's right below the FAQ link. Fill in the information. Let us know what kind of equipment you have. Are and we work with them directly to get it done.
Excellent. Yeah, that's really cool. I think that a lot of people out there would be, you know, based on 800 audio streams, it sounds like a lot of people out there are willing to help. Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to ask, from a peak perspective, how many listeners are online at any given time? Or again, let's speak from a peak perspective.
Like on an average, you know, day, real special going on. We'll have 2,000 to 3,000 people connected, roughly. So somewhere in the, you know, 2,000 to 2,500. Get big events, and that can surge up to, you know, 5,000 people simultaneously if there's something. Really no, the shuttle, you know, the shuttle. We're really well listened to, but you know, it comes and goes. Some of the listeners, you know, they'll connect for very short periods of time, and they're just seeing if you know, a stream is really, really busy, and then they'll just disconnect. So there's quite a lot of unique listeners that, you know, come in very quickly and leave, and then there's also a lot of people who just stream, you know, pretty much all day long. There's a lot of people that this is their background as at work. So
yeah. No, that's awesome. I used to get my coworkers really mad at me. I used to work at a real estate office for a very short period of time, and I would leave it on, and you know, it was just it calmed me down, you know. But people didn't understand. Oh, you know, they thought it was annoying, and I got quickly blackballed from listening to that when I was at the real estate office. But I was definitely a streamer back in my day. That was fun, and I enjoyed listening to it. So, Mark, do you ever listen to any what stream do you listen to the most?
Actually, when you asked me a question before about that, the ATC Sim or whatever it was, VATSIM, I answered the question you just asked me. So shame on me for not being on top of the conversation. I do listen to 12055, which again is the Northern Chicago approach, and again Oshkosh. But I just love listening in onto the people I know, the ATC guys I know that all reside again on 12055.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a good frequency if you're flying out of Chicago Executive.
Dave, what's your favorite feed to listen to? And don't just give us the easy one where you started at Logan. Is there another one that you kind of become accustomed and a favorite of?
These days, I only listen around here if I'm trying to track a club airplane or other people I know, but listening to New York Approach, various sector. These days, some of the Boston Center sectors, we've added some of the busier sectors that overlie the New York TRACON, but also Chicago Approach and Chicago Tower, O'Hare Tower, are those.
Those are. I like listening to O'Hare. I was driving by the O'Hare the other day, and it was probably about 2 months ago, and I powered it up, the Live ATC app, and I was listening to it because there's all of a sudden I was driving under one of the final approach paths, and I saw a CRJ kind of at a weird altitude, and I was like, yeah, that doesn't look right. You know, that guy must be going around. So I was like, something must be happening at O'Hare. So I dialed in the Live ATC feed. It's kind of neat because it's, you know, just on demand, figuring out what's going on. And, you know, little did I know that there was a thunderstorm approaching, and it was a good heads up that the drive home was going to be pretty rainy. So
it wasn't a dead animal at the departure end of the runway.
No.
The caterers hadn't picked it up yet.
No, not at all.
Actually, Dave, when you come to Chicago next, and you probably don't need us for it, but in our club we happen to have someone pretty important over at O'Hare Tower, and I think he'll arrange for a tower tour for you.
That's great. Ran into one of the O'Hare Tower controllers at Oshkosh this year. I was hanging out with all the NATCA folks at their booth, and some co-exhibiting with them, and we had a good time. He was really cracking me up.
That's cool.
They have a tendency to do that. Sometimes, unfortunately, it's when I'm in the air. But anyway, that's another whole different point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was I think those guys are pretty cool at Oshkosh. And, you know, when you have to set up the Oshkosh feed, Dave, do you have to go out to Fisk and Ripon and actually put up scanners and things like out there? Do you get to hang out with the controllers for a little while at Fisk?
Yeah, I did that not this year, but last year in 2011. I hung out with those guys for a little while, and it was something I wanted to do for a while. I've only actually been going to Oshkosh for a few years. But no, the scanners are all located at the airport, and we're fortunate to have a pretty good setup there that can pick up Fisk with no problem. So that wasn't true. Like the first year, for whatever reason, we had an antenna and some external noise that was masking the signals a little bit. But we're in a better location, and we have a good antenna, a good feed line, and we can pick up everything from that one spot there. So it's pretty easy. We've got everything basically in one stack. I think we're running 7 or 8 receivers and a very small PC that has a multi-channel sound card. So it's all very compact, very low power, and very reliable setup running Linux.
That's awesome. I didn't realize, you know, I would imagine that there's all this equipment, which it does sound like, you know, with scanners and feeds and everything. But, you know, to host all this is it sounds like you've pretty well streamlined it and got it as simple as it can be. It sounds like.
Yeah, in the early days, it was a kind of a rat race. When I started out, we were, you know, we're talking about early 2000 and trying to stuff PCI sound cards into a Windows box just to see if that would work. And Windows doesn't deal very well with in general. It's very, very poor support of sound when it comes to multiple sound cards. You know, not all are equal, and very quickly we started morphing into finding a solution based on, you know, a lot of Unix operating systems, and I don't want to use it just because I and like it. There's really good reasons for using it, and so we've been able to come in on a really nice solution for high density, that is, you know, 10 to 15 streams off of one computer type stuff, but also very tiny. Like these Raspberry Pi streamers, we can stream a few audio streams off of a single Raspberry Pi, which is basically a 30-foot computer. So just that, you know, a few USB sound devices, and away we go. So it's gotten a lot easier.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. Now, do you have any international feeds yet?
Yeah, we actually have quite a large international presence. We're basically on every continent. There are some notable places we don't cover, and this is especially if you watch our Twitter stream at all, you'll occasionally see folks, usually Brits, grumble about why we're not covering the UK at all and all that. But there are some places we're streaming, not by us, but by the person with the radio, is actually illegal. The UK, unfortunately, is one of them. Otherwise, we would have dozens of feeds there. Germany's another one. Italy's another one. There are some other ones. There are some places that I think technically it's illegal, but it's unenforced. Yeah, we have a pretty good presence in Europe, and that's growing as well, and a lot of stuff scattered throughout Asia. We brought up a couple feeds in Pakistan not that long ago.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
Those are very reliable at the moment, but we've had to wait for some time. Very, very busy, very, very popular, and quite a presence in South America, and also out in the Oceania area, Australia, and we had New Zealand, but it's another area that kind of frowns upon their citizens streaming the ATC. I'm not sure what they're all talking about, but you know, for whatever reason, they don't want it happening. So we try to honor, you know, those laws, even though we're not subject to the law because
right.
We don't live there. But, you know, we try, you know, last thing we want to do is have somebody get in trouble just to stream ATC so people can listen to it. It's just not that important.
Right. No, that's pretty cool. I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that your footprint is expanding, and it's a shame that those countries don't allow that. But kind of long term, what's kind of your dream for liveatc.net?
Well, we're trying to do, I'd like to more formally introduce it into more flight curricula out there, you know, different flight schools in some formal manner, but mostly it's really about wide and deep expansion. You know, the big vision has always been to really just, you know, blanket the earth with receivers and have coverage virtually anywhere that might be interesting, and also overcome some of these legal barriers. We're working on some permission, a special permission to get activity allowed all throughout the EU, for example. We work on and off directly with the UK authorities to help them understand having this out there. People listen anyway, even though they don't really enforce it. You know, UK is really, really big activity, and if you go there, watch people looking over the fence, they've all got their radios out, and nobody's arresting them. So,
right. You know what's interesting is that there's, if you go to, if there's plane spotting is very popular out, at, you know, in Europe. And I remember going to the Zurich airport, and they had a little cutout in the middle of the airport where, you know, you could hop on a van from the, in the terminal, and they'll drive you out to the center. And, you know, everybody, like you said, Dave, had their radios out, and they had their high power cameras out to, you know, take, you know, massive, you know, high quality pictures of these airliners landing. So they should definitely get it, hopefully, you know, get it legalized, and, you know, that would definitely help you guys out, and hopefully you can help them without that throughout that process. So, but it has liveatc.net made a turn, or is it what's the thing that surprised you the most about where the website has gone in a direction that you haven't even thought that it would go?
Let's see, can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Fine. I thought there was a cutout there a minute ago on my end, but just can you ask that question again?
Yeah, no problem. I'm just kind of curious, and what, you know, I'm always surprised on things that I do, and you know, they always take a turn in a direction that, you know, you never could even have thought. And I'm kind of curious to hear what your thoughts on where is liveatc.net gone? Which direction has it gone that you can even have, you know, thought or imagined that it would be at right now?
Well, I mean, in terms of you know, the use of the site and you know, what things being used for, like, or the pilot training thing was one that I really didn't see come. The media thing is another one, those are the biggest things. I think beyond that, it's a lot of direction that I think's been mostly expected. That is the AVGEE pilots, list controllers. It's amazing how many are out there. I never thought. I think one thing I've been surprised about is the number of folks that are interested. When I see, you know, just when you think you hit a cap somewhere, then there's just new people all the time, and that's been really surprising. And I think the big thing has really been the explosion in mobile.
Yeah,
it's really been by far the biggest growth area, and. It's really surprising that, you know, people will actually listen in their cars and, you know, every opportunity they get and at work, and, you know, some people go to sleep with it with earphones on. So
I'm talking about Al.
I must admit that I don't do that regularly, but I've done that once or twice.
So, you know, Dave, you mentioned that it's taken a lot of time outside of your day job, if you will. It's not even how you really earn your living. So I have to ask, this started out of a passion. Has it remained a passion, or has it started to become a job?
Well, job. There's no mistake about that. There's, there, in terms of passion, is that, you know, we've got some difficult things to deal with, whether it be tech support issues that come up, or try to have better uptime on. You know, one of the biggest issues that we have is, especially some of the Windows computers, a Windows update or something, and all of a sudden it'll come up, and all of a sudden you won't hear the radio anymore because the wrong input of the sound card got selected, so now it's not talking to the radio, things like that. But by and large, I think one of the reasons that we've done so well and we've been able to deploy, and I've had the motivation to deploy a lot of the equipment that we have out in the field, is that I still am passionate, a big user of the system, and I'm a firm believer running something, then you're going to do a good job making sure that the quality is good and that that it's going to be enjoyable for others. And I think that that comes across with the feed volunteer. But, you know, we try to do a lot to get them excited being a part. They're really in the same boat that that I started out in. They just really want that platform so that they can actually use their system. So so it works out well.
Oh, that's really cool. I mean, to have, you know, it is quite a bit of work, and you know, it's pretty interesting. I know that, you know, when our feed goes down, they're kind of, like you said, they're kind of in the same boat. Yeah, I mean, you're very kind to send an email saying, hey, check this out, and all that. And, you know, there's some coordination efforts amongst the few people at our flying club that kind of help the feed out when it goes down to get things going. And, you know, we could definitely relate to that. I mean, and props to you to be able to manage all this and to continue to grow the site and do what you do for a full-time basis. That's quite a bit, a lot of work. So that, thank you very much. I mean, that provides a lot of entertainment value to a lot of pilots out there.
Oh, you're welcome. I think one of the big secrets is trying to automate things as much as possible. Feeds do down hard due to network issues or issues. We have an automated, network monitoring system that alerts I think you're actually on that notification list, Al.
Yeah.
Notifies you if there's a problem. One of the things that we're working on that, you know, I mentioned how sometimes the sound input at a given location can switch to a different sound plugged into, which results in the feed being connected, but people listening to silence. We're going to be rolling out, hopefully sometime in the next month, the silence detection monitoring system, where we'll be able to look and we'll know, like, for example, if it's totally silent 24 hours, that'll be a different type of notification. So
right now
we rely on listeners to tell us about that, and it's, you know, less than ideal, but, you know, world, nobody's going to die if
it's a sort of, I look at things, I mean, I don't like
things don't work. I'm a sort of a perfectionist when it comes to, you know, the hardcore technical stuff, that, you know, the reliable part of running networks. But in the end, you really got to keep things in perspective. I always say, you know, nobody's going to die. Nobody's going to lose a limb. You got to keep in perspective.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Did, I want to touch upon this flight training aspect of and get your thoughts on how you could use this in flight training. I know you mentioned maybe just kind of previewing the airspace that you're going to fly, but how else would you envision this as a training tool for students?
The archive is really useful for this. I've been working on collecting, I got a pretty big, extensive private archive of different things that I've heard over time. And I think taking a lot of those real world examples, of various situations that come up, and, you know, using those in training exercises. I go to a club every month called the IMC clubs. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of that.
Yeah, I have.
It's basically for those about it, and you're an instrument pilot, or even interested in instrument flying at all, like if you're going to go get your rating, see if you have a local IMC club chapter. And it's a monthly meeting. We basically get together to talk about mainly instrument flying topics, and we analyze different situations, and it's pretty neat. It's really, it makes you think, and it keeps you flying a lot safer, because you're just more aware of things that you would sometimes never find out about. But I'd like to of these radio clips into, you know, sort of a not really a course, but just sort of a bag of resources that maybe flight instructors can use to demonstrate things, because you just can't do it. You can't come up with all these scenarios when you're in the aircraft. And not only that, but it's expensive to fly. And I think even though you should be doing a lot of the communications training in the cockpit, time in the cockpit's probably a little bit better spent working on flying. So a lot of stuff can really happen on the ground. And I think if students knew a lot more of what to expect and what to avoid, once they do get in the air, they're making better use of that time.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great point, that in this goes back to Mark, you and I had a conversation about this, of the accessibility of aviation. And you know, and Dave, you just mentioned the how expensive it is to learn these lessons in an airplane. You know, I think this could open up, you know, aviation a little bit further to people, just based on the fact that, hey, this could actually be a tool to lower the cost of flight training. I never even thought of it that way, but that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think that's important. As we look forward to next 5 years, which I think are a critical time period for general aviation and flight training in particular, and getting new people in, I think that's just the key thing. You know, there's a lot of focus on LSAs and flying, flight training cheaper for people through that. But that's sort of a whole different topic. But yeah, sort of the total cost of training and then the ongoing cost of continued training, I think this could certainly contribute toward that.
Yeah, we've been calling for a paradigm shift, and of course you can't have a paradigm shift without enabling technologies. And that's what we're seeing, not only in the aircraft, but in the things like we're talking with liveatc.net, training full motion sims, it goes on and on. So I think it's ripe for the paradigm shift that's so necessary for the new and future pilots of tomorrow.
Oh, absolutely. I think that oh, go ahead.
Sorry, there is a lot of technology. I'm not sure if you guys have seen, you know, we're talking about the VAT network and the network, but a friend of mine, if I could just plug his site for a second, because I think it's relevant. Pilot Edge, you guys may have already seen it, pilotedge.net, and that's really sort of a commercial version of what VATSIM is, but really, you know, much more focused. So that particularly is a place where that training happens, much more sort of structured environment, much more of an educational environment for pilots and instructors and controllers.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really cool. I just pulled it up here, and this looks actually really neat. And hopefully, I'm looking forward to kind of checking this thing out a little bit after the show. Have you? This is a lot like the VATSIM, you said, correct?
Yeah, it's a lot like VATSIM right now. They actually have VAT controllers, but these are, you know, the cream of the crop working as controllers on that network, and it works very much the same way. So as a pilot, you have your whatever flight simulator you're flying with a small software plug-in, and then you plug into that network, you come at the scheduled time, and you fly through what is right now, I think, mainly Southern California airspace, because that's what they're focused on prior to the expansion that they'll do. But right now they're sort of in their, you know, they're in a growing mode right now, and Southern California is the area they're doing. But it's cool. They'll actually show up at Oshkosh, and they have a display with a simulator company, and you can actually go right in there and experience the whole thing. I was put on the spot. I got in, had to fly a Baron, do a bunch of approaches down to minimums and stuff like that, and that was pretty cool. It's really neat to get that feedback and have the communications part of it, because a lot of times you sit down at a simulator and you just have the simulator. That's it. There's no comms, except maybe some synthetic thing that you know, throws instructions at you or something like that. But it's to have that two-way interaction, it's priceless.
Yeah, no, that's really neat. You've kind of challenged me to figure out how to incorporate either Pilot Edge or even liveATC.net into flight training. You know, I'm very passionate about trying to figure out ways to make it better and things like that. And you know, I had my own ways of, oh, let's go pull the tapes and kind of review it and see what happened. But to actually make this kind of an interactive thing and you know, give kind of look into the future, what students may be facing in different airspace environments, I think that's kind of a really neat call to action. So thanks for the challenge. I'm looking forward to that. So, but anyway.
Dave, you had asked, or you had mentioned earlier, not the IMC club, but you mentioned the club. Are you also a member of a flying club?
No. A local flying club here, the New Hampshire Flying Association. We fly a 1982 A36 Bonanza.
Wow.
So we have about 13 pilots in the club. And, you know, I know you had Adam Smith on here before recently, I guess. I didn't get a chance to listen to that, but I know flying clubs and how that's what people are starting to view as the big future of general aviation flying, as opposed to, you know, individual owners. And I've been in this club now for 6 or 7 years, and it's just been the greatest thing, because it's not just greatly reduces the cost of flying a good aircraft, a safe, you know, well-equipped aircraft, but there's where most of us, where we collect form probably at least half of that IMC club meeting every month, and there's other fly with each other. You know, we'll go to events or, you know, fly out to Oshkosh.
So
pilot when we're going to on some of these longer trips, but the total aspect of the flying club thing and the whole experience with that is just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, we agree. Well, go ahead.
Mark, go.
Yeah, we agree. As a matter of fact, Al, you may have seen my post. It was so neat. We were on the ramp yesterday, beautiful day in Chicago, and three of our four planes in our club were sitting on the ramp starting up. We had a father who's a member taking up his daughter. Next plane was a son who's a member and a pilot taking up his father. And the next plane was just two club members doing, as you suggested, you know, cutting the cost of flying, splitting the cost, going out and doing a little training, maybe practice an approach to, and maybe even grab a $100 hamburger. And I just love the club atmosphere and the camaraderie and the improvement, because even sitting in a back seat, as you well know, you learn a lot about flying, and I think it makes us safer, and it's cheaper, and it's more fun.
Yeah. Go out flying, whether I'm right seat, left seat, passenger, you said, every single flight I learn something, without exception.
Oh, absolutely. So. Absolutely, and I think that's going to be pretty important to you know, the Bob Schmelzer always says a good pilot is always learning. So, I mean, to capitalize on those opportunities, flying clubs do them very well, and I think that's pretty exciting. But anyway, Dave, thank you very much for being on the show with us tonight. This has been a real treat to get to know you and hear a little bit more about liveATC.net. I think I didn't realize all the, you know, behind the scenes stuff that went on. I know that I'm sure I kind of had a hunch that there was a lot, but I didn't know it was this much. And you know, that's pretty good insight to what you do, and you know, the entertainment, at least for me, that it provides, and hopefully new training scenarios is I continue to give lessons. So thank you very much. That's outstanding.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, and I love your show. We'll help spread the word about Simple Flight. You guys are doing a great job.
Well, that's terrific, and my thanks as well. And I suggest, Al, that why not, let's get a fly out, meet somewhere in the middle with the New Hampshire Flying Club, and get to meet some folks live, maybe in Cleveland or somewhere, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's one guy that was tweeting during this interview, and he said, I was asking what everybody's favorite ATC facility is, where they would like to work. And one guy said Burke Lakefront, so funny you should mention that. Maybe that's Burke Lakefront should be the halfway point.
Yeah, I don't know if it's halfway, but we could stop at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame there, so right by Burke Lakefront, so I'd enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good.
That one's actually a bucket list of airports to land at, so that would be a great place to do it.
Yeah, well, now that they took Megs away, I say now, of course it's been all these years, but there's something special about lakefront-type airports or those out in the water. Here in the Midwest, we just don't have enough of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good. Well, Dave, thanks a million again, and we very much appreciate it. And hopefully you don't mind us spreading the good word of liveatca.net. Please stay in touch and let us know if any cool updates, and we'll be sure to pass them along.
We'll do, and stay in touch. We'll and if you want to collaborate offline on the flight training stuff, let's keep that thing going.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good. All right, Dave. All right. Well, thanks, and we'll see you later.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, thanks, Dave.
You now.
All right, bye-bye. Well, that was pretty cool, Mark, wasn't it?
Ah, it was better than cool. Like I said, I've got this, I don't know, maybe it's just this thing inside me that still is all about ATC, and I love listening to controllers. And like you said, that there was so much going on behind the scenes, I just know that I just turn it on the internet and I get to listen.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was his full-time job, so to learn that he's a pilot on the side, he runs his own company as a consulting company, not on the side, but Live ATC is more on the side. It was very informative, and I'm just glad he does it, and I'm so pleased. You know, that's why I asked the question, that this is becoming such a big part of his hours during the day. At what point does it cease to become a passion? But I just don't see that happening. I think this is something that Dave is committed to because he shares that same passion we all have.
Absolutely. I think this is the thing that makes aviation great. People take their outside talents and bring them in towards aviation, and that really turns aviation to a really cool product. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, Dave's a perfect example of that. So that was really cool, very insightful, and I can't wait to pull up my liveatc.net app up again and listen to it on the way to work.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out. You're going to show me how to do that. I guess it's probably pretty simple, but I'm just used to doing it when I'm at my PC. And I think it'd be great audio listening. Matter of fact, I'm going to be driving to, I hate to say that, but I am going to be driving to Iowa for the holiday because I couldn't get an airplane for all those days.
What?
Yeah. So I'm going to be listening to liveatc.net for that 3.5-4 hour drive that I've got ahead of me. Oh, just saying that just drives me nuts. I'm going to go buy an airplane tomorrow. I can't drive this thing.
Yeah.
You know what's really cool, Al, is that the companies that have started, and I know it's not limited to aviation, but you and I have been talking to a lot of, as we say, amazing people doing amazing things, and I love that it's all born out of this passion. You know, it's not someone that was looking for a dollar here or something else. They love what they're doing, and next thing you know, you hit on something like a live ATC feed than 10 years ago or whatever it's been, and now it's everyone's on it because we all share that same thought. It's just neat.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the fuel and the drive that we all have as pilots, no matter what. I think that exists somewhere. And you know, once you find it and you strike it and you throw a couple logs on that passion fire, holy cow, cool things start to happen.
Exactly. A couple logs on the passion fire. Let me write that down. I kind of like that.
Well, you know what? This is a good segue into what's our favorite segment of the show, Mark?
Well, no, my favorite segment is talking to the people, but you know I love to hangar fly and hangar talk.
Absolutely. That's, you know, right? It's all, well, the right answer would be the whole show.
Yeah, Mark. Exactly. You know what's funny is I'm making a new emphasis for the flying club to be active, not only on the Facebook page, but the Google calendars and all that, because when I look at a lot of flying clubs, you know, last updated, you know, 1922 or something like that, and I want to make sure we're more updated, so I put on ours every Saturday as a calendar event, come out to the airport, you're either going to fly, you're going to talk about flying, or you're going to eat, and you got to do two of the three.
Right.
And this weekend I did all three. We talked about it. I got to fly and I got to eat at the clubhouse.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
How cool is that? But anyway, I digress. Let's go to Hangar Talk.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start it off. I'm going to go back to the log on the fire. Well, you know what? I had the captain tonight of our flight. He got a little chilly in the cockpit, and he asked, "Hey Al, would you throw another log on the fire?" And what? And meaning turn it up. But I pulled him over here, and I got him with us. And this is Mr. Captain Travis Ammon with us tonight for Hangar Talk. Can you believe it?
No. Hey Travis, congratulations on earning captain.
Hey, thank you. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. This is great, and I can't believe that both of you guys left me to go out east, but I know you get paid to do what you do, so someone forced you to get in that beautiful 2008 King Air that you guys fly.
Absolutely. Well,
they twisted our arm to do it.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I will say that the startup, I mean, you guys, I was at the airport, what was it, about 4 o'clock, something like that. All of a sudden I heard that turbine spin, and I thought, oh, my God, I wish I were going with them.
Yeah, well, that's Travis Ammon was the guy that actually delivered that feeling to you. He was the guy starting engines today, and that was it's always fun starting a turbine engine like that.
Yeah, I was surprised, you know, you guys did that power cart thing. I thought that line guy was going to wait till both blades were spinning heavy and then run over and get in the way of a blade, maybe.
Okay, can we? This is a pilot confession, true confession coming out. On our very first flight ever, I don't know why, I was just really nervous, and you know, it was just kind of at the airline, everything was just kind of at your own pace. But you know, when you switch to a corporate job, these guys show up, they get on the plane, and they want to go. So they demonstrated that just through the way that they're walking and, you know, got on the plane. Do you remember that, Travis?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah,
is this the trip from Des Moines to Omaha?
It was. So we had but anyway, we get on the plane, and I was really nervous. I'd never flown with Travis before, and you know, our boss was on board, you know, and these guys were looking to go to Omaha. And anyway, we start up the engine, and you know, everything's all fine and dandy, and I go to call for the power to be disconnected. And I look, I started the wrong engine. So here's this guy, here's the line guy right near the engine trying to disconnect the power. The prop is blowing like mad. And, you know, the next day, the airport or the line service manager called me and said, please start the other engine next time. You know, this is just, you know, we want to keep things safe for our crews. And I'm just like, oh, man. You know,
was that here at Pewaukee?
It was. It was the first day jitters got the best of me.
You know, that was an interesting day too, because when we got to Omaha, we had to hold for about 15 minutes, and then we had to shoot an ILS approach down to minimums after the tower blew some of the fog off the runway.
Yeah,
close to the ATIS.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they got that was quite a bit of a learning flight for all of us. And you know, Travis, I think that was one of your first flights down to minimums, wasn't it? Or first approach?
Yeah, that was one of the few, yeah.
Yeah, so that was in a brand-new airplane and, you know, with new passengers.
With a new boss.
Yeah.
Here's a suggestion for you guys. Never admit you're nervous. Don't let them see a sweat.
Well, you know what Travis did after we got out of the plane is he just started signing autographs to all the little kids.
There was just one there.
That's like the passenger who asked the pilot, how long is it going to take us to get there? And the pilot responds, I don't know. We've never made it yet.
Absolutely. Now, Mark, what would be your favorite turbine airplane to fly?
Well, you know, I guess the obvious answer might be a King Air, but I just don't see that in my future. I would love to get the opportunity to fly a PC-12.
That's not a bad choice. Not a bad choice at all.
Yeah, because I'd have to go out and get my multi rating before I could fly the King Air, unless we only started one engine.
Yeah, you got it, Travis.
What about you?
Well, I would probably. I kind of like. I'm in the single engine turbine class as you, but I wouldn't mind a Meridian.
Yeah, you know, obviously that also seems real to me, as does the TBM, but the Meridian, that's pretty tight. I'd still love to fly it. I haven't flown it. I love the Piper equipment, so I would never turn that down. But if you're going to give me the dream plane, I think the PC-12 would have to be at least in the single-engine turbine piece.
Yeah. Travis?
You know what? I think if I was in a real big hurry, I'd have to go with that TBM, because that's just a sexy airplane. But I'd like to try that caravan. Load up everything, all the kids in there, all the hunting equipment. We could fly up to Colorado and go hunting, or go up into those backcountry airstrips up there and just have a heck of a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah.
Well, actually, when you say that, my immediate vision was Flying Wild Alaska when they have that caravan. And I know it doesn't go fast, but it's a cool airplane.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've seen them equipped with just luxurious insides or as a cargo plane, and it's just a great airplane.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that'd be pretty cool. There was a the state of Maryland, I believe, runs one of those for the governor, and that's the kind of the state executive transport airplane. I don't know.
We have a club member that's temporarily, I don't know how many years, but he's living in L.A. now. And he was talking, you know, they fly King Airs in the, I think, LAPD. And I think we had Daryl Kimball on just a few weeks ago, who's a San Diego County helicopter pilot, or was, and now has been promoted, you know, talked about that as well. And I just think there's some pretty neat state airplanes, law enforcement airplanes, all that, that are much more than you might expect.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
What do they fly in Doylestown? What does the mayor of Philadelphia fly, or whatever?
That's a good question. But you know what? It's interesting. Out here, every day they have, well, I don't know about every day, but on a very, very regular basis, they have a corporate helicopter. And I think it's an Augusta helicopter. Augusta. What's the right word pronunciation for Augusta or Augusta?
I'm not sure.
I think it's in one of the two. It flies from Manhattan, and it drops a couple of the executives off out here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I can ask you, because your boss may be listening. But what's your dream job?
I'm doing it.
Dream airplane. What's your dream job?
I'm living it right now.
All right, good answer. Survey says.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely can't complain. We got Travis is a great guy to work with. The other Johnny, he was on the show a couple months back. I don't know if you remember talking with him. And our boss is really great. The people that we fly around with are really great. And it's really one of those diamond in the rough. Flying jobs.
Yeah, and you guys have got me excited about seeing Doylestown, Pennsylvania, which was never even on the list. I still don't believe it exists, but I want to go see it because you keep talking about it.
Yeah, come on out. But there's a what would be your dream job, Mark?
I probably should say I'm living it, but especially since I just started a new job about a week ago. But on the off chance, not listening, you know that I would just love to do anything in aviation, and as I do on a volunteer basis. But like so many of our listeners, like the two of you, I mean, this is what I love thinking about, love doing. And so I don't even think I have to fly, although that's the fun part. But at my age, I know I'm not going to be getting any corporate jobs soon. So, you know, working with the Flying Club initiative that Adam Smith is doing, I hope to partner with him and the other flying clubs out there. And just be around the airport and help in aviation. That's what makes me happy.
Oh, that's really cool. I can tell that a smile has been put on your face, you know, as we get to listen to all these cool people doing cool things in aviation. It's been kind of a neat journey, and, you know, you definitely, you know, you can, I think it's kind of struck a chord with you, Mark, that, hey, this is a lot of fun, and, you know, aviation is not just avgas and propellers, but it's also the people that make it pretty cool.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, when we heard from Dave, and he's talking about getting his commercial, which is something I've been I'll say struggling with, from taking the time necessary to get the written taken care of, to get the maneuvers down, and then to take the test. It's because I too am going after a CFI, because to me that would be the perfect retirement job, and retirement job only in the aspect of not needing to earn the bigger dollars to support my flying habit. You know, that I've recently, in the last year, my last son went to, or finished his last tuition payment. God, I'm having trouble talking tonight. So, you know, as we downsize and all that, the income need to be a little less, or can be a little less, and I could just see retiring with a CFI type job. I think that would be wonderful, just doing things like you guys do, and that's teaching people how to fly, how to realize a dream.
Absolutely. Now, Travis, you got back into flight instruction just recently, didn't you?
Yeah, just a little bit, working with a gentleman right there at Pawaki.
Nice.
Just started here this last week, Thursday, Friday, and we actually flew all day Saturday. Kind of went out to the Galt area, did some landings out there.
That airport's for sale.
I put a down payment on it already. We're moving out there.
Yeah.
I actually like that airport.
I do too.
You know,
that's
I understand
a nice place.
That it's not tough to make money, but I think it's a great little airport.
I do too. I agree with you.
I think a lot of people may have heard that the Galt Airport. It got a lot of publicity in that from the AOPA, didn't it? Saying that Galt Airport's for sale, and the price tag was like $2.5 million.
Yeah, there was a lot. It was on the AOPA Live, the little TV show they do every week. And
yeah.
It was in the magazine a couple times.
Yeah. Hey, I hate to put a downer on it, but I just got a text message, that there was a GA plane crash today at Burlington, Bravo Uniform.
Oh, no.
Yeah, two dead. Plane from Antioch, which is a suburb in northern Illinois, or northern Chicago. I guess that's northern Illinois and part northern Chicago.
Oh, wow.
That's very sad to read. I don't have any other details besides that, but it happened today, and we'll certainly check more out, but our thoughts and prayers with those and their loved ones.
Absolutely. That is too bad to hear.
Yeah.
So there was now that you, Mark, you made us frown. Tell us something that aviation wise will make us smile.
I should tell you something that'll make you smile?
Yeah.
If I haven't done that yet. Well, I tell you, it was the things that we really talked about, and the things that are going on in the club. I had such a sense of pride on that ramp yesterday, seeing three of our club planes start up. You know, I've talked before about being in the air, and we had one member that commented he was in Western Illinois and heard a club plane. He was in Southern Illinois, which is it's not a small state, and heard you coming back from Gaston's down in from Arkansas, coming back up and stopping at Champaign, and it just the closeness continues to amaze me. How we keep running into the same people, and how much we share, and so that's kind of a daily thing with aviation, and makes me smile on a daily basis. How about you?
I would have to say it's definitely I've really gotten in tune with the flight training aspect of all this, and I keep mentioning this through multiple times throughout the show and all that, but I'm pretty proud of my students and looking to see what the achievements that they've made and see how they're going to make an impact and a difference with their new licenses and ratings and things like that. You know, that's an important thing to understand that, hey, you're not necessarily giving somebody a license or a rating. You're giving them the ability to be able to go take their wife and see their kid that lives in another state, or take their wife up for lunch and things like that. So there's a lot deeper of a meaning to that kind of thing, and you know, it just makes me really happy to see people, you know, achieve their goals like that.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, and as we talked about earlier in the show, you have a couple of check rides coming up for a couple of your students.
Yes,
and one of them texted me.
All right,
and I said, I basically asked about audio and if they could hear us, and he responded, "Yes, I have pressure now that you announced my test."
Yeah, so we're gonna throw that pressure on him. And then it's interesting. I think I know who you're talking about, but he's going to be. He wrote a blog article, and this is something neat. But the Piper Flying Association magazine saw the blog article, and it's now they're turning that into the feature article in their December magazine.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And you know what's neat to tie it all together is that. So we flew the blog article is actually posted on simpleflight.net under the aviation blog. You'll have to scroll through a couple pages, but you'll be able to see it. But we flew down to Decatur, Alabama, and visited a customer of his that does he supports a product that is a piece of equipment in this factory. And you know what they do at this factory?
Tell me.
They make the carbon fiber material for the 787.
Wow.
Yeah. So here we are at a Piper Archer helping the manufacturing process of the 787. So David helping Goliath.
Yeah, well, and it's planes helping planes.
Yeah, it's great.
You need a plane to help a plane.
Yeah. Save a plane, ride a pilot.
There you go.
That was I used to say that in college. That was a good mark.
You know what I want to do? You know, I hear you talk about that going down to Decatur, Alabama, and I know you guys. What it was like a 22-hour day with a stop in Memphis on the way home, and a 11:59 stop. What was it in Springfield or Champaign to get fuel just before they closed?
Yeah.
And I realize how little I use the plane for what it could do for me. And I see family, and I love that about it. I go for the $100 hamburger, and I'm with friends, and I love that. But I really do, and I'm going to say this on air so it now becomes a goal that people will hold me to, is I want to get to more airports. I want to see more of things to be seen rather than the same old all the time.
Yeah, right. I think that's a pretty valuable thing to experience. Travis, yeah. what are some of the airports that you like to visit?
Well, I'm kind of a stickler for closer to home where I grew up at. I like to visit those little airports out there because there's always a nice little...
What the heck is all that squeaking going on there?
I think my microphone's messed up.
There you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sound far away from the mic, and then I'm hearing like a thunderstorm, or either that or someone had a lot of beans for dinner.
How's this?
That's much better.
All right. I would say, you know, one of the favorite things I like to do is I like to eat like Mark does. You know, he likes to talk about eating with the flying club. So, you know, I like to go to those airports where you know where all these great little barbecue joints are, these great little places to eat at. And one place we go to quite a bit lately has been Fort Worth Sphinx Airport.
Yes.
It's down there in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and there's a little place called Roscoe's Smokehouse, and they've got the best jalapeno cheddar sausage you can imagine, and the chicken and the brisket, and it's just amazing.
All right, I'm going to top that.
All right.
And I think I've talked to you about this. If you want, and then I guess you could call it a little bit different segment, but the best barbecue that I've had is in a place in Kansas City, of course.
That has some weight to it.
A good start. Oklahoma Joe's. Now, why it's called Woo! Oklahoma Joe's when you're in Kansas City, and it's actually just on the Kansas side. They actually have two locations, but just across on the Kansas side, guess where the barbecue place is? What the establishment looks like?
Something in a strip mall.
No, it's a gas station. It literally is a gas station, and anytime you go there, I don't care if it's at 8 o'clock at night. They close, I think, at 9. The line is out the door, so you're literally standing next to a gas pump while someone's pumping gas into their car. And you know they got a little liquor store inside it. It's your standard little gas station on the corner, but they have several tables. And the line's so long, and it's on the list of 10 places you want to eat before you die. I forget who Zagat or whoever makes that list. And it lives up to the hype. I just love that place.
Yeah, no, that sounds really, really delicious. They had Travis and I, when we're on the road, we've got a barbecue. I mean, that's basically what we hunt down. on these overnights and things like that. And holy cow, we need to add that to the list, don't you think so?
I think so. We'll probably have to find that one.
It'd take you about, a little over an hour to get to Kansas City from here?
In the King Air?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd take me 2 hours in the Cirrus, so we could go that, and I'm cheating.
Oh, well, thanks.
Perfect.
Nice guy.
Are we stopping at the liquor store that's tied right to the barbecue joint, too?
Yeah, but as long as the person that's flying doesn't stop at the liquor store.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Travis.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, Travis, you weren't there, but Al, have you eaten at Pilot Pete's a lot? I know we were just there Thursday night.
I think there was it's interesting. I go in these stints where I'll go to Pilot Pete's a lot. You know, it's like, oh, let's go to Pilot Pete's for a lesson. We'll end a lesson with the flight to Pilot Pete's and have dinner and then fly back. Or Janesville or Madison. And another one I was going to a lot was Eagle Creek in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of really good airport restaurants out there. If you have a favorite airport restaurant, make sure to let us know. Tweet it, hashtag SimpleFlight. We want to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, one I've mentioned before is Lone Rock, which is just west of Madison.
Yeah.
Where it's a little shack. They probably would hate that I call it that, at the end of the runway. And new ownership in the last year or two, but I remember the owner, she said to me, you can still only order one pancake because they're so large. And it's a fun place to go, and I haven't been back probably in close to a year. So we ought to do that one of these upcoming Saturdays or Sundays and get a great pancake.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love who doesn't like pancakes?
Yeah, now you had said something, and we are talking about getting other clubs together.
Yeah.
And having a little breakfast together. And I'm still trying to figure out what you're smoking, because you want to do this in January. Who has a pancake breakfast in Chicago in January?
Who has one in July?
Everybody.
Yeah. Their pancakes are like winter, you know, rib sticking, log cabin maple syrup, you know, hot cocoa coffee type of thing.
That's fine if you're inside a log cabin with a fireplace. Inside a hangar with an open door, no one will be able to wrap themselves in hot pancakes rather than eat them.
Well, why don't you do like
what are you thinking?
Do the first annual Leading Edge Chili Cook-Off.
Yes.
Okay.
I love that.
I hold my ground. Why would we want to be outside in January?
Well, we don't want to be outside. We'll be in the hangar.
We'll have chili.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in that hangar in the winter?
Yeah, and it's great. The ice melts right off the airplane.
Yeah, right.
They have that big-ass fan. I'm not sure if I can say that on the air or not.
I didn't hear it. So
they have that big-ass fan. It'll keep it nice and warm.
Well, there you go. Maybe we can find a different hangar that's closed and got better insulation, but the one we're in, just, oh my goodness, you'll freeze.
It'll be warm with company.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm willing to try it, but when it's 20 below and we have 10,000 pancakes and the three of us eating them.
Yeah, that's great. Then that's more, so that's 10,000 divided by 3, that's,
33.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of pancakes.
That is a lot of pancakes.
The right amount of pancakes.
Yeah. Hey, when I was growing up, my favorite meal of the week was dinner in front of Perry Mason, Saturday night, 6:30, and we always had pancakes. I did not know growing up that pancakes were for breakfast, because we only ate them for Saturday night dinners.
Really?
Yeah, Bisquick. They were the best pancakes. You couldn't, well, there was no such thing as a microwave, but yeah, my mom made them from Bisquick, and I saw her mix it up, and, oh, we put it on the griddle. You're bringing back memories. I'm making it a nostalgic night. It was just great.
Yeah. No, that's great. There's a, I think that the pancake breakfast, it seems like they were really popular. They've kind of fizzled out, but hopefully they stay popular. We need to bring them back. I know that there's all these, there was something in Flying Magazine or AOPA. Maybe they still have it. I don't know. But they would announce the fly-in breakfast all over the country.
Yeah, I think, E-Pilot does that.
Yeah, oh, do they?
Yeah, AOPA, E-Pilot, you get on Fridays, I have next one, and I get the flying, there's a couple of them. Actually, Aircraft Owner, I think, also lists them, but Yeah, I think there's a lot of them. I didn't take advantage, but there's an airport just north of the border, a little bit west. Bigfoot? I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was.
I flew in there this week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a great fly-in. They had the pancakes. They had the clowns on stilts. They had helicopter rides. It just wasn't flying and have pancakes. They made it an event for the community and for the kids and for the pilots that have the kid inside of us. And I'll always remember that as one of the best fly-ins that I've seen, at least in the Midwest, in a long time.
Do you know how many people that go there for that fly-in?
No. Do you?
Yeah, that's 5,000 people.
No way.
Way. So to put that in perspective for the listeners, that's a it's a little north south east west grass strip, and the strip is like 2,000 feet. Each runway is about 2,000 feet, unattended, just grassroots, like a little coffee can, just donate if you want type of place, and 5,000 people go there for that fly-in.
Well, you know the Clow, which is the first Saturday in June. Someone's got to stop squeaking that leather over there, by the way. But have you been to the Cavalcade of Planes?
No, I haven't.
So that's on a Clow, and I think they have 15,000 people show up.
Holy smokes. That's a lot of people. Do they have anything like that back in Nebraska?
There's a few of them here and there. It's not such a big thing as like we see in Illinois and Wisconsin and that type of thing. But yeah, there is some. They've got the state annual fly-in, that they've got pancakes and all the goodies and all the fixings.
Oh, that's cool.
Did you go? You didn't go to school in Lincoln, did you?
No,
Travis?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Actually, this Friday, Iowa University of Iowa, my alma mater, which I'm embarrassed to say after this football season, is playing. I believe it's Nebraska.
Yeah, it's the Heroes game.
You better believe it.
Every Friday after Thanksgiving for the rest of eternity.
Okay. Well. I'm actually going to that game. I should be going to that game. I think I'm going to that game because I'll be there. And I don't know if my son's listening, but he works for NBC and will be covering the game. And I'll be on the field with them, I think.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I love doing that.
So what are you flying there in?
Stop it. I told you I'm going in the Pontiac.
Yeah. You recovered nicely from using the live ATC feed and listen to that.
Yeah, exactly. If I could get a plane, but I was slow to the trigger, and obviously Thanksgiving weekend, everyone signed up for all the planes. And, you know, we have a club member that's buying the most beautiful V-tail V-35B Bonanza in the world, and he's going to have it on Wednesday. And I told him, boy, I'd love to take it. But we both decided maybe I better go through a checkout.
Yeah.
Take his brand new plane. I used to fly the F-33, but I've never flown a V-tail, so I'm going to go through a proper checkout on that.
Yeah. Well, that'll be great.
Hey, I just got a message. Someone that is a normal listener just sent me a note, said, hey, I normally, you know, had to be in a meeting, but we were asking about the feeds.
Yeah.
Live ATC, and Las Vegas made his. He said, besides PWK, I rock KLAS.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome. I love listening to that. Las Vegas is actually surprisingly very busy airspace.
I bet you're right.
Yeah, it is.
Get it? I bet you're right.
If I was a betting man, I would. I guess I would have gotten that.
Pun intended.
Yeah, pun intended. Okay, so I started with a great joke and sucked on the end here.
That was a great joke earlier, by the way, too, Mark.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, as I told Al, that sometimes this week-to-week thing, because most of the aviation jokes have been heard 100 times over, and you just hope that people just don't have the memory they used to, and so they sound new.
Yeah, well, that's you hit it out of the park. You hit it out of the park all the time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So this was an interesting show. You know, we aren't in the same studio. We're both actually in different places than we're used to being.
Yeah,
but it worked out okay. I prefer us sitting across the table from each other and doing the interaction. But this works.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely served its purpose, and you know, Dave said. You know, these things do take a lot of work, and you know, figuring out the behind the scenes stuff, you know, it's kind of fun. We learn a lot, and you know, this is a it's only going to get better if we ever have to split up like this again and and all that.
Well, and we brought in some technology. I mean, today we use Skype, but got some other technology for future so we can do a better job of handling call-ins. Obviously, tonight it wouldn't work because we weren't in our home area, but we'll be able to take more call-ins and maybe even be able to queue people up a little bit better than we have in the past. So that's exciting direction that the show will be taking.
Absolutely. We got some people sent some emails in, a lot of tweets going out there and all that. But yeah, overall, another win for Simple Flight Radio.
And for our listeners. Absolutely. And so what do we got next week?
Well, next week is going to be a really cool show. A gentleman by name of John Fiscus is going to be on the show. He's the vice president, chief pilot of the Flight Academy out in Seattle area, based out of Boeing Field, and he's going to pose some really great flight training questions and kind of look at the flight training issues that we're faced with today.
Oh, that'll be a great show. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Absolutely, definitely.
And certainly we thank Dave Pasco, the founder of liveatc.net, everyone's favorite internet site, for joining us tonight, especially he, like you, tonight, are in the Eastern time zone, so made it a late one, but certainly when it comes to talking about aviation, I think we are all willing to make that sacrifice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, all the listeners, and, please have a great Thanksgiving.
We wish you all the best. We have a lot to be thankful for, and hope everyone has a very safe and happy Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. And as always, blue skies
and tailwinds.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.